This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the last 2 weeks, two top U.S. generals, recently retired, have called for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld and Vice President Cheney say the American public is getting too much bad news on Iraq from the press. Generals Anthony Zinni and Paul Eaton suggest the public has had too little truth about how we got into the mess in Iraq and how bad it is now. Disastrous is Zinni's word. Incompetent is Eaton's. The soldiers on the ground are great, they say, but Rumsfeld must go. Up next on Point, General Paul Eaton on accountability for failed leadership on Iraq, and The New Yorker's George Packer, who writes that a flawed strategy has brought the U.S. project in Iraq to the brink of defeat. But first, we turn to Baghdad and to Borzu Dargahi, who's based there as bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. Borzu, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Let me ask you first, if I can, just on the latest, on the video that was alleged or thought originally to have been of a U.S. pilot being dragged through the streets after the helicopter came down. Then we heard it might not be a U.S. pilot after all. What's known at this point?
Well, not much is known. The U.S. military is saying that it's unable to verify the authenticity of the videotape and what it is. And the insurgents, they put this stuff on the internet. It's just not clear at all at this point what this is.
And the report we have of a bombing of a mosque in Najaf today, is this another bell ringer in sectarian terms or just everyday violence?
I think this is a little bit more provocative than that. It was a bombing of the most holy cemetery, the Valley of Peace Cemetery in Najaf. Which is adjacent to the shrine of the Imam Ali, who is the cousin and son-in-law of the Prophet and widely considered the founder of Shiite Islam. We'll see what happens with regard to the violence.
Borzu, let me ask you a big picture. We've heard recently Donald Rumsfeld and Vice President Cheney saying the press is not giving an accurate, full view of what's going on in Iraq. Rumsfeld in particular saying they don't know, they're not out there. How do you respond to that?
Well, I respectfully disagree. I think that's just not accurate. I think that we are out here. I think that the U.S. officials are often barricaded inside the green zone, which is the administrative center of Baghdad. Meanwhile, we're out in the red zone. I just went out to the supermarket and went shopping among Iraqis. I went to the video store and bought some DVDs and, you know, stop by a cigar shop. You know, I mean, I'm out there talking to people all the time, so I have a pretty good picture of what's going on. I think most of the journalists here have a good picture of what's going on. To be frank, I would love to do a story about, you know, the first Citibank opening up in Baghdad or the first McDonald's opening up in Baghdad and real progress being made and real good things happening. Frankly, Iraq right now, it's just not really a good news story. It's hard enough just to get out there and get the story and keep your staff safe, much less do stories about like schools being repainted.
But Borzu, listen with me, if you would, to Donald Rumsfeld March 8th at a Department of Defense press conference blaming the media for the bad news out of Iraq.
From what I've seen thus far, much of the reporting in the U.S. and abroad has exaggerated the situation, according to General Casey. Interestingly, all of the exaggerations seem to be on one side. It isn't as though there simply have been a series of random errors on both sides of issues. On the contrary, the steady stream of errors all seem to be of a nature to inflame the situation and to give heart to the terrorists and to discourage those who hope for success in Iraq.
Donald Rumsfeld on March 8th. And if you would, Borzu Dargahi in Baghdad, listen with me as well to retired general, head of CENTCOM, Marine General Anthony Zinni on NBC's Meet the Press just last weekend, saying the media is not to blame for the bad news in Iraq.
Well, I think the American media is being made a scapegoat for what's going on out there. At last count, I think something like 80 journalists have been killed in Iraq. It's hard to get outside the green zone and not risk your life or risk kidnapping at a minimum to get the story. And you have to remember that it's hard to dwell on the good things when the bad things are so overwhelmingly traumatic and catastrophic.
Borzu Dargahi in Baghdad, is there tension there between the press and the U.S. military, or is the U.S. military
you know, glad, it, perhaps in bitter terms, to see the news get out. How do you read it?
It's hard to say. I mean, the relationship goes up and down between the military and the press. Sometimes they are welcoming towards us. Sometimes they're not. And really, quite frankly, it varies by brigade to brigade, and sometimes from battalion to battalion. Certain officers are more friendly to the media than others. So it's hard to characterize that. I would say that, you know, in general, though, more and more, there's a more of an agreement about what's actually going on between the media and maybe not the senior officers, but definitely the lower level officers and the soldiers, the sergeants and privates.
Borzu Dargahi in Baghdad, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Borzu Dargahi, Baghdad bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. Joining me now from Tacoma, Washington, is Major General Paul Eaton. He's a West Point grad who served 33 years in the U.S. Army. He led relief efforts for the Army after Hurricane Andrew in 1992. He was operations officer for Army forces in Somalia in 93. He was deputy commander of U.S. forces in Bosnia. From 2003 to 2004, he was commanding general of the Coalition Military Assistance Training Team in Iraq, assigned to train Iraqi security forces after the disbanding of the Iraqi Army. On March 19th, he called for Donald Rumsfeld's resignation. Today he speaks about that call for the first time. General Paul Eaton, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, thank you very much for the invitation.
You say Donald Rumsfeld must go, and you've got a long list of reasons, but just take us in from the top. It's a big and serious call. Why have you made it?
The last thing, Tom, that pushed me over the edge was the Quadrennial Defense Review, the QDR, and I had developed a particularly distasteful impression of the secretary when he was so rude and inappropriately handled General Shinseki. That started the secretary's downward spiral in the leadership of the United States Army and with a lot of our colleagues in other services.
Shinseki, of course, the general who said that we would need far more troops in Iraq and got more or less immediately sidelined. Having said that, it turns out he may well have been right.
Absolutely. I mean, General Shinseki was the one of the architects of our very successful operation in Bosnia. He clearly understands the troops to task when you're talking about Phase 4, the reconstruction effort. Nobody expected a big problem in taking down Saddam's army. It had already been pretty well beat up over 10 years of isolation with the containment policy that we had for Saddam. But what most soldiers recognized was that Phase 4 was going to be a pretty hectic time. We need a lot of men on the ground to be able to execute.
Phase 4 after the invasion, but it's much more than rudeness you're alleging here, General Eaton. You're saying of Donald Rumsfeld, in sum, he has shown himself, quoting you, incompetent strategically, operationally, and tactically. That's about as broad and sweeping a condemnation as you can make as a military man.
Well, that's generally the construct when you look at military operations, and you typically expect your senior leadership to stay at the strategic and operational level. The decision to go in there with a minimalist approach on ground forces was a gross strategic error. Recent comment from Secretary Rice that tactical errors have been made, that's not a tactical error, that is a strategic error. The continuing intent to refrain from growing the United States Army and the ground forces, United States Marine Corps, is a strategic and operational problem. The fact that he got in there and meddled in a truly micromanaging approach in the movement of forces, the actual deployment of forces into Iraq. He tinkered with a plan that had been built painstakingly over years and created a disorganized deployment of forces into Iraq. He failed to properly manage the diplomatic angles with our NATO ally, Turkey. He got in the business of day-to-day tactics and the withholding of money or the granting of money in a haphazard and in a incoherent fashion as far as money on the ground.
In the days after General Eaton's call for the Secretary of Defense's resignation, the question was raised to President Bush. March 21st, here's a question from CNN's Kathleen Koch put to President Bush.
There have been growing calls from some of those members for the resignation of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, also from his own former subordinates like U.S. Army Major General Paul Eaton, who described him in a recent editorial as incompetent and tactically inept. Do you feel that personally you've ever gotten bad advice in the conduct of the war in Iraq, and do you believe Rumsfeld should resign?
No, I don't believe he should resign. I think he's done a fine job of not only conducting two battles, Afghanistan and Iraq, but also transforming our military, which has been a very difficult job inside the Pentagon.
The president standing up for Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. General Paul Eaton says he should go. General Anthony Zinni says he should go. General Eaton, when you hear the commander-in-chief standing by his man there, what are your thoughts?
Well, intense loyalty is a hallmark of our president. And we're at a point right now where we've got to recognize, I'll borrow from Mr. Greenspan, we've got a case of irrational arrogance with the Secretary of Defense. He is simply unwilling to consider the advice of pretty seasoned men. And the critics of those who call for this Secretary to step down will say, you know, quit looking in the past, quit dwelling on the mistakes of the past, look to the future. Well, the architect of the mistakes of the past are still there. And this Secretary of Defense has created a real drama here. And if we leave him in position, if we leave this man who refuses to take the advice of his subordinates, who has depowered the chairman position according to what we had tried to do with Goldwater Nichols.
Is that chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that you mean, General?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see more mistakes in the future. We have got to get somebody in there who can lead this country into a qualified success, into victory in this mission that we've got in Iraq. It's a critical mission to this country.
But the president has said repeatedly that he's doing what his generals want. Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld says the same thing. What they ask for, they get. So are you and General Zinni mavericks? Are you way out there on some, you know, marginal moonbeam here? Or is your assessment of the secretary widely held within active duty senior ranks?
Tom, I have gotten a host of emails, telephone calls from men I know and from men I don't know. Every contact has been laudatory for the position that that General Zinni took and that I've taken, and just perfectly supportive of the position that this secretary must step down.
But you wrote, you said, in the 5 years he has presided over the Pentagon, I have seen groupthink become dominant and a growing reluctance by experienced military men and civilians to challenge the notions of the senior leadership, that is, Rumsfeld and his coterie. Groupthink? So is the military itself, has it been cowed by this secretary? Is he being challenged in the daily operation or you know, even the grander level of operation of U.S. military efforts in Iraq?
Tom, I believe so. The George Wilson wrote an article a few days ago, Rumsfeld's Potted Plants, and that's a far more damning article than what I wrote with respect to the senior leadership of the military and a departure from the intended result of the Goldwater-Nichols Act of 1986, and that is the empowerment of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
You say that the impression has been given that the senior man in uniform is just as intimidated by Rumsfeld as what his predecessor, General Richard Myers. How do you intimidate a general at that level, General Eaton?
Tom, I'm at a loss. I am at a loss. I also wrote that Congress needs to reestablish and reassert itself, and the way to do that is to cause senior leaders and junior leaders to come before committees, the HASC or the SASC, and to testify. And you get somebody in there, and particularly a public testimony, you are charged as a soldier to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and when you're asked a question by Congress, you give your best and considered advice.
You're saying that because Congress isn't asking the questions, the issues that are boiling there simply aren't becoming public enough.
I believe that's true. And if we can get the Senate Armed Services Committee and the House to break this out into the light of day, I think that the country will be far better served.
General Zinni is saying these days our current war in Iraq may be turning into a repetition of Vietnam. That's a very broad statement. I'm not even sure exactly what it means. What do you say? Are we headed into that kind of quagmire? You write about the magnificence of the troops on the ground, but if the leadership's not there, in your view, where are we headed?
I would not draw the Vietnam analogy. I did not serve in Vietnam. I have only the historical context. What I do know is that great soldiers on the ground are creating one success after another at the tactical level. And I do know that we have a series of great successes in parts of Iraq. The North and the South are going pretty well. Mm-hmm. We have a real problem in the center.
General Paul Eaton, a lot of listeners would like to speak with you. I want to begin to bring them in. Mary is calling from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hello, General. How are you today?
Hi. I'm doing great. Thank you, Mary.
Very good. I was curious to know, at the beginning of talk of invading Iraq, what input came from the generals, and who was... who was permitted to speak, and were any dissenting voices allowed? I mean, you see the aftermath in terms of sort of careers being shattered and, you know, people resigning. But I was just curious to know kind of what the workings were in terms of the process of the decision-making.
General Eaton, how about it? General Zinni has been very critical on that front. He wrote already in his book, earlier book, Battle Ready, that in the lead-up to Iraq War and its later contact, he wrote, I saw at a minimum true dereliction, negligence, and irresponsibility, at worst lying, incompetence, and corruption. What about the lead-up to the war? What did you see?
Tom and Mary, I was at the infantry center and not so-called in the loop until I got a phone call about a week after the president declared mission accomplished on aircraft carrier Lincoln. And so what I saw was, and what I recalled from earlier exposure to the planning leading up to this, is that we were going in on the margin, that we were going in with just enough troops to execute phase three, that calls to establish the Powell Doctrine had been denied, and that the commander of Central Command, General Franks, had basically yielded to the pressure that that was applied by this Secretary of Defense.
Now, when you say phase three, you mean the invasion phase. When you say Powell Doctrine, you mean overwhelming military superiority.
That is correct.
And those were not there, not on the scale that the Powell Doctrine would have suggested.
Absolutely, and it was even worse when we could not get the 4th Division in on the northern flank. When we could not get
through Turkey,
passage right from Turkey to move the 4th in there, the 4th had to, and it desynced the plan, the 4th had to back off and go through the canal and come back up through the straits to execute a landing and then to move following support of the 3rd MEC and the Marines.
General Zinni looks even earlier. He says that the evidence of WMD wasn't there, that, you know, he didn't see it, and he was up to his elbows in that work. You weren't focused on that, but, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about that. General Zinni is saying this was being pushed well beyond anything I could see actually going on. Is that a widely shared view?
Tom, it was a drumbeat out there, and again, I was exposed only to what I saw in print. I was not in a position to evaluate intelligence. General Zinni certainly was. There is evidence that he used it in the past. There are a whole lot of Kurds and Marsh Arabs who will tell you that, and Iranians who will tell you that they were on the receiving end of weapons of mass destruction. So he has had them. He did employ them. The intelligence that he had them in a deployable state Only General Zinni and those who were in the intelligence loop could speak clearly on that.
And General Zinni says Saddam did not have them in that state in any meaningful way, but in we went. You're particularly concerned about this quadrennial defense review that's come out recently. What is it about that? This is the every 4 years the Pentagon sort of looking at its big strategy. Why is that the thing that triggered you to speak out now, General Eaton?
Tom, the QDR is really the scene setter for what we're going to do in the future with the armed forces. And the president has stated that he was satisfied that the secretary is properly transforming the armed forces. I disagree. The environment that we're in, this secretary is simply not paying attention to the contemporary operating environment. He is not acknowledging the fact that we have a requirement for greater ground troops and for greater and detailed human intelligence. There is, if you follow the money, you will follow the money into very expensive high-end programs that are non-discretionary applicators of violence, if you will. That's kind of polite speak for we can kill things a lot better and a lot more efficiently with smaller footprint on the ground. But when you come to the application of discretion, that is a private and a sergeant and a lieutenant on the ground who makes a decision based on the environment that he's in whether to apply violence, that is, whether to kill somebody or not to kill somebody. And this transformation of the military that the president speaks to means that the armed forces of the United States will become ever more efficient, and we are by far the most efficient armed forces in the world on killing our enemy. That's great. I absolutely endorse that. However, when this QDR did not grow the army, in fact, reduced it on the margin, and had a 15% increase in special forces, which is a very small increase in numbers.
1,500 troops, you write.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And that is a failure to recognize the demand on the ground, a failure to recognize the fact that we are applying intense pressure to the Army and to the ground Marines to execute repetitive assignments in Iraq and Afghanistan, all the while maintaining responsibilities elsewhere in the world to fight and win the nation's wars.
You say it's too much. You say the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, should go. Mary's calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you very much. My political opinion about the war these days has more to do with or less to do with what the Democrats are saying or the Republicans are saying or even what the administration is saying. What really amazes me is the number of military officials such as yourself, former high-level government officials that are coming out against this war, which, from my recollection, is unprecedented. But everybody's coming out very credibly, very articulate, and actually former people who have served in Iraq. Is this an unprecedented situation? And it almost sounds like a mutiny.
Well, I have to say, Zinni and Eaton generals are not active duty. General Eaton, you're a West Point guy. You must have looked at some military history. How unusual is it for recently retired generals to make this kind of criticism? You hear how Mary hears it.
Tom and Mary, we have had this kind of criticism in the past. This republic admits and actually thrives on open discourse. This kind of discourse cannot and should not happen in the active duty ranks. I would like to state that I am not against this war. We are in this war, and we must prosecute this war to a successful conclusion. And I do not call for a withdrawal of troops. I do not call for a cessation of operations by a particularly wonderful Army and Marine Corps. What we have right now, we've got a problem with the senior leader of the armed forces. That's the issue. And we need to get somebody in there who is willing to engage with those who have a lot of wisdom to share.
Someone like who? In your essay calling for Rumsfeld's resignation, you suggested Joe Lieberman, the Democrat senator. Why?
Well, if there's any feedback that I've gotten that questioned what I wrote, it relates to Senator Lieberman. I find him, one, if you go across the aisle and pick a Democrat to come into your cabinet, that is a substantial gesture. Fred Barnes, the day after in the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. wrote that Lieberman would be a pretty good candidate to replace the Secretary of State Rice, moving Secretary Rice into the vice president position. So it's not unprecedented to reach across party lines to find somebody who is willing to engage and to come up with a considered solution to what is really a very complicated problem.
Right now from New York, we're joined as well by a reporter of considerable substance just back from Iraq, George Packer, with a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of The Assassin's Gate in America in Iraq, and a big news story called The Lessons of Tal Afar in The New Yorker this week. George Packer, thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
You write, the soldiers who worked to secure Tal Afar, and of course this was the city fiercely fought for on the Syrian border, were in a sense rebels against an incoherent strategy that has brought the American project in Iraq to the brink of defeat. That seems to kind of affirm what Generals Zinni and Eaton are saying. How do you hear their claims against your reporting, George Packer?
I think it's absolutely accurate what they've said about the failures by the Secretary of Defense and by senior military leadership. The commander of the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, which fought to secure Tal Afar and to take it out of the hands of pretty hardcore jihadis, is Colonel H.R. McMaster, who's a real bright light in the Army. And he essentially put into practice counterinsurgency doctrine, which in parts of the Army and the Marines is now being pursued and studied and learned and implemented. But it's really happening in a sort of ad hoc, improvised fashion across Iraq, because there's really never been a consistent strategy, either out of headquarters in Baghdad of MNFI or at least of all out of Washington, to use the lessons of previous counterinsurgencies. And one reason this hasn't happened is because Secretary Rumsfeld, from the beginning, has refused to call this an insurgency. I think the reason for that is he simply didn't want to bog down his high-tech military in a long, protracted war in a distant country with the shadow of Vietnam hanging over it, and that's what the word insurgency would imply. But unfortunately, that's the reality in Iraq, and the failure to call it an insurgency meant that commanders on the ground had no guidance from Washington for the first 2 or 3 years of the war. And so local commanders like Colonel McMaster essentially made it up on their own. And some of them are doing a really marvelous job, as I saw in Tal Afar, but they're doing it without adequate resources, without enough men, and above all, without a really overarching strategy coming from Washington. And ironically, H.R. McMaster is also the author. He's a PhD in history, and he's the author of a really substantial book on Vietnam called Dereliction of Duty, which is about the failure of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to speak truth to power, to tell Robert McNamara and Lyndon Johnson that their strategy was bound to fail. And so, and there are many, many echoes of the Iraq War in McMaster's book, Dereliction of Duty.
General Eaton, how about it? Do you see a failure to come to grips with reality or to accurately describe reality, even within the military, from the Secretary of Defense office here? That's essentially what George Packer is reporting.
Well, Mr. Packer has been most eloquent, and his citing of Colonel McMaster, whenever you mention his name, the shadow of McNamara looms large. And one of the reasons that I believe this secretary is reluctant to step down is he does not want to be viewed as McNamara take two. The assessment that George Packer has just laid down about what he has seen on the ground, I could never challenge. And I do validate this business of failure to properly resource the troops on the ground for the missions they've been given.
Why isn't the military pushing back here more effectively? General Zinni, when he talked over the weekend, said that, you know, the resignation should start with Donald Rumsfeld, but maybe they should extend to those who didn't properly, you know, sort of resist or put up resistance when it was merited. What's the dysfunction here, General Eaton?
A soldier has a responsibility to execute the legal orders that he has been given. He has the responsibility, the absolute responsibility, to provide his considered advice. When that advice is discarded or discounted, the soldier is then given the mission to execute. Germans used to say, for the German Army, the issue of the order was the beginning of the discussion. For the American Army, issue of the order is the end of the discussion. The discussion has got to continue. And when the soldier is given his marching instructions, then he has a choice of either execution of the order or retiring or resigning. And only the Congress can offer a way out after that.
George Packer, you're just back really from discussions with men who have been very much at the front lines here. Do you hear this frustration with top leadership there, or are they so focused on staying alive in the immediate task that's far from their minds?
Well, first of all, it takes a lot to push a soldier to the point where he's going to speak disrespectfully of people above him in the chain of command to a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in Iraq, in some areas, that point has been reached off the record and in sort of moments of spontaneous anger. You hear a great deal of bitterness toward Donald Rumsfeld, not toward senior military so much, although perhaps a bit, but above all toward civilian leadership. But most of the time, as General Eaton so eloquently said, they really are focused on executing the orders, and it's a very difficult mission that they're doing. They are well aware that they do not have all that they need. And I think as they grow older and gain a bit of distance on Iraq, that feeling of bitterness is going to intensify. My guess is we will be reading books like Dereliction of Duty in the future by veterans of the Iraq War. But for now, they have to believe that the mission is doable or they couldn't do it. And this is one of the remarkable things I've learned about soldiers is they cannot allow themselves to think the darkest thoughts if they want to do the job that they've been given as well as possible. Some of them do think those thoughts, and you can see it hampering them. But most of them understand the need to do the mission, and so they, in a sense, tune out what their nagging consciences may be thrusting on them. But I think the time will come when they will no longer do that, and then we're going to be reading, I think, some scathing accounts of the war by soldiers.
Generals Eaton and Zinni say the soldiers on the ground, magnificent, but the leadership at the top, they say, must go. Bob's calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Bob, you're on the air.
Well, hi, how are you doing?
We're fine. What do you think, Bob?
I think Secretary Rumsfeld was without a doubt the most outstanding Secretary of Defense we've ever had.
Why do you think so?
Top-notch man.
Why do you think so?
Oh, he is doing the great Lord's work in building a world-class military. He's got brand new aircraft coming off the line and in planning. He's got the airborne laser program moving forward that's going to make tremendous strides in missile defense. His ability to plan, process, and budget for the new force is without a doubt something that hasn't been done for years.
And what do you make then of the calls from Generals Eaton and Zinni for his resignation?
Well, generals, when they retire, and of course I'm a retired colonel, mm-hmm. when generals retire and they want to sell a book, they can certainly do that. And they don't sell a book by praising the Secretary of Defense. That's just not done in this town. And by the way, that's a classic Washington game.
General Eaton, do you have a book for sale, sir?
I do not have a book.
You don't?
So what do you say to our caller, retired colonel, General Eaton?
Bob, what are you doing right now? What line of work are you in?
I'm a professor.
All right. Well, all the things that you just said about the Secretary of Defense are accurate. What you fail to realize is that that's fine for World War III if you're fighting the Warsaw Pact. That's not what we're fighting right now. Our problem is what we call in the Army the contemporary operating environment. We have got to get better at the training of our force so that we can put these great young men on the ground to execute current operations in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And putting aircraft in the air and Virginia-class submarines and airborne lasers, they're great killing machines, but they do not allow the soldiers on the ground to apply discretionary violence in a classic insurgency.
Bob, right stuff, wrong war. What do you say?
General, I'll have to certainly agree with you on the fact that we need those people on the ground and trained, but I would suggest that they are without a doubt today better trained and better prepared to fight the war in Iraq and Afghanistan than they were in the prior administrations, and in particularly when Secretary Cohen was there, when the training budgets were being cut, when the training facilities were being rolled back, when the reservists didn't have any mandates to operate out in the field. Right now they're getting a very solid training background. We have a number of very, very highly qualified, highly motivated, superbly trained individuals who are taking the training and lessons that had been learned and bringing them back to Carlisle and doing just absolutely superb work and getting those lessons back into the field. We're getting
Bob, we've got the view.
Could I say something here?
Yes, please, George Packer.
Yeah. He can put all the carriers and fighter jets to online that he wants. He's presiding over a disaster in Iraq because of a series of decisions he made, and that's what history's going to judge him for. We're fighting the most important war in our history since Vietnam, and this Secretary of Defense has brought us, I think, to the brink of a strategic defeat, not necessarily a military defeat, but a strategic defeat because of his decisions. And the reason is he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't believe in fighting counterinsurgency wars. He doesn't understand them. And you say that in the 90s, the soldiers were worse trained than they are now. In the 90s, a whole generation of soldiers learned lessons about peacekeeping and security operations in the Balkans. These are lessons that Secretary Rumsfeld willfully forgot, actually tried to keep from being applied to Iraq when his own Office of Stability Operations attempted to say, we need more troops, we need more security, these are the things that are going to happen after the fall of the regime. They were ignored by Rumsfeld, and that has brought us to this point. So all the high-tech systems in the world will not change the verdict of history if this Iraq project goes the way it's going now.
Bob, thanks for your call. General Zinni, of course, has 10 years of planning on Iraq ignored by the Pentagon leadership. William's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
General Eaton, good to talk to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I know General Zinni quite well. I don't know you, but let me pose a couple of questions to you, if I could, real quick. First of all, I think that the animus that exists between Mr. Rumsfeld and his people and the services has existed probably since the summer of 2001. Is that not correct?
What are you pointing to there, William, for the rest of us?
The high-tech versus the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
The high-tech versus the mundane. Trying to replace people with things and equipment. You've already alluded to that and actually spoke specifically of that.
Mm-hmm. We've heard General Eaton say that he's not comfortable with that in this war. And your second point, William?
Well, and the other point is, well, the fact that the point of that is that certainly the argument between the services and some of our generals goes back to the summer of 2001 and predates the war. That's only my only point there. Secondly, I think the question about the CJCS commander and his relationship with Mr. Rumsfeld, both of them are flyers, and it is an interesting point that both are flyers, and they apparently saw eye to eye as flyers. It is very hard to pull everything together unless you are a ground commander. In the end, the ground commander has to pull everything to finality, as opposed to the flyer.
And the flyer with the air power background. Our time is short, William, but we've got you there. We appreciate your call. I want to get one more call here from Nashville, Tennessee. John's on the line. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Good reporting. It's excellent. My son has been in Iraq here, I guess, he's returned now for the fourth time, and his first trip back, the opinion there was that it was kind of sketchy. They just didn't like Rumsfeld. Bush was considered their commander-in-chief, and then after a year there, he had to return back for another year. They didn't like Rumsfeld. They said he was no good, and then Bush, he didn't want to have an opinion on. And then after that, he's back now again, but then they said they hate Rumsfeld, and Bush is just totally out of control. And they said now he's back for his fourth term, and he said before he left that the morale there on the troops is basically they're there for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to keep each other alive. And I think that's pitiful.
That's a report from the front. And John, thank you for your call. George Packer, a final thought from you. You're talking about the brink of defeat here. You say strategically. What do you mean by that?
I mean, we can win all the platoon-sized engagements that go on in Iraq, but if we are forced to withdraw because of the failure of the administration to keep the public's confidence, or if Iraq fragments into 1,000 pieces and it'll look like civil war in the form of mass chaos, then we've lost. And it doesn't matter how many engagements in the field of battle we want, because what we need is for Iraq to be a stable and unified and reasonably representative country. And right now it's not going in that direction. So our, you know, Clausewitz was right, and a lot of commanders are learning it all over again. This is politics, and if Iraq does not succeed as politics, then we have lost whatever the military situation.
General Eaton, how do you read it? We've just got half a minute here. Can the war be salvaged under this Secretary of Defense? Can it be salvaged under a new one?
I think the entire nation would be better off with a new Secretary of Defense, and I endorse what George Packer has just stated. And this war will be won. It has to be won. We cannot afford to lose what we have started and to fail at what we have started in Iraq.
There's the view from the retired General, Major General Paul Eaton, joining us today from Tacoma, Washington. General Eaton, thank you for your service. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
And George Packer, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of The Assassin's Gate. His new article is The Lessons of Tal Afar. George Packer, thank you for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Sure, no problem.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.